Hi, good morning, everybody. Sean, Addict Alcoholic.
Hey, Sean.
Thank you to everyone who brought food. Thanks for showing up on a Saturday morning. Maybe some juices. I know Adam likes that. All right. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So again, Sean, Addict Alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 14th, 2022. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. Sponsor before him and before them. We have many lineages of sponsors and sponsees, and I sponsor. All right, so going back, childhood was pretty normal. Nothing spectacular. I'm the oldest of three kids. I was born March 30th, 1987. Closing in on 40 quick. If I shave, you'll never know. So I'll keep acting like I'm a child a little longer. So. Family's heritage and lineage, Irish, Italian, so a good mix of carbs and whiskey, so, you know, we're doing pretty good from the start. Catholic upbringing, I was born in Chicago, being raised Catholic, far as I can remember, it was always fear and guilt, not really any kind of relationship with God or a higher power or anything like that. And when I look back on being a kid, there was two themes that really stick out to me. And when I have some memories of growing up, because in Chicago, everyone has a bar in their basement. It's just what they do. Jim might have had a bar in his basement one day. So I always think back. I saw adults get to drink. And the men don't have to go to church on Sundays. That's all I can remember was that I saw them all drinking always. And then, okay, on Sunday morning, well, the guys aren't going to church. So when I get to a certain age, I'm going to get to drink, and I'm not going to have to go to church anymore. So those were two big things for me. I wouldn't say, I have one uncle for sure. That's one of us. But most of the drinking that I was exposed to was what I would describe as social drinking. Never really saw anything, wild other than, one family member who is in and out of these rooms up in Chicago. Another big theme for me, especially, I think, being the oldest, was carrying, I didn't want to be a burden on my family. I was always putting inordinate amounts of pressure on myself. Because I'm the oldest. I have to be strong. I don't want to be a burden on my family. I'm going to hide my problems. Even if I hurt myself, around the house or something, I would try and fix my wounds and not, do that to my parents. So the lying, was also a big theme for me, even at an earlier age. If it's an easier, softer way just to, bend the truth a little bit to protect somebody, So, yeah, just those character defects, when I look back, were coming in at an earlier age. Just inflated ego, even though at that age didn't understand that that's what it was. We moved down here around 92, grew up in Town Lake. Again, just typical middle-class upbringing. My parents weren't heavy drinkers, raised us right. extremely loving household. Again, I have two younger brothers. Woodstock was fun, had a great time, was definitely, had a good foundation of friends down here. And then around 98, I would have been probably around 10, we moved up to Jasper, and that was sort of where the shift started for me, because in Jasper was a totally different world than down here. Learned my first day of school up there that they hadn't gotten over the Civil War yet. I was called a GD Yankee my first day of middle school up there, and I was just like, I never heard that term before. I didn't understand what they were talking about. I didn't get it. But as soon as they figured out I was born in Chicago, and that persisted. So that being an outsider, that's where it began, where I'm like, how do I find my way? What do I do to get respect and, all those types of things. So the chameleon aspect of my personality really started to come out at that point. What could I do to get people just to not pick on me, to treat me with respect? Just did not have any kind of level of acceptance as to who I was as a person. So people pleasing, you know, all the things, you know, at 12 years old, you know. So for me, the big things were, you know, was humor, and like sports. That was what I like thought I was obtaining my value through was baseball. Cause I played that all throughout high school. So like I thought that would like bring me, you know, accolades and things of that nature. And then humor, I'm from the Jackass generation that came out when I was a kid, so a lot of self-humiliation, humiliating others, if it was funny and it got a joke, I think most of it was at my own expense, you know, passing gas in class, things of that nature, just wondering why I'm not getting any girlfriends, wonder why, so that was, my first, appearance in a local newspaper was for, we faked a kidnapping. Again, didn't see the big deal in that one, having your buddy pop out of a trunk duct taped. It was a joke. My first drinking experience was at 14. I would have been a freshman in high school. It might have been my eighth grade year. Kind of hard for me to remember exactly, you know, what semester it was. We sought out to drink to get drunk from that first experience. Wasn't a good one. Definitely got sick right from the right out of the gate. I think it was like 2 weekends after Smirnoff Ice came out, and we heisted a bunch of Smirnoff Ice from the local Ingles. Great to come back out the other end with. And then, again, through sports, and then once it became known that I like to party on the weekends, I was able to start hanging out with the older kids and the cool kids. So, like, as a freshman, I'm getting to run around with the seniors. So, you know, then I would really puff my chest out. You know, I'm a baseball player. I get to hang out with the seniors. You know, they like me because I drink. You know, I'm a savage. You know, it's just, like, all that type of stuff where it's just, again, the ego, you know. It was just, okay, like, you know, people picking me up, giving me rides. I don't even have to worry about driving to school or anything like that. All the older kids pick me up. Again, ego. And then, you know, the anger was still ever present because I remember, like, my breaking point with the getting picked on and the, you know, being the outsider Yankee boy, like, where I finally, like, just beat the heck out of some kid. You know, and again, though, that, you know, just ego, because it was just like, I'll show them, and then I can, you know, walk around, no one's going to mess with me anymore. They still continue to do that, but in my head, you know, I was better than, you know, I'm sitting here getting to do all these cool things, and, you know, if you mess with me, I'll beat you up. You know, my friends used to call me Strong Arm Sean, because I'd be the one to handle the situation if needed. And then my parents got divorced when I was about 14, maybe 15. So when they split and were living in separate houses, Mom was on the road a lot for work. And Mom's attitude towards us drinking and hanging out in high school was, as long as you're at the house and not driving, it's acceptable. Just don't be driving. But, you know, she didn't know, you know, what to do at that point, you know, with us, you know, that's, whereas Dad missed, he was no fun until you're 21, so he definitely disagreed. He, was not with that. So with Mom traveling a lot and us sort of having carte blanche to do what we wanted, as long as we stayed at the house, our house became the party house. And that was, again, for me, ego and validation where, okay, I'm hosting all these epic parties, you know, watching, whatever, the American Pies of the world, all those other, like, teen high school movies where I'm just like, I get to create this in my house, you know, and it was just pretty wild chaos going on to have that, and thank God nothing ever happened where no one, you know, because we had a pond and a pool at our house, so someone could have drowned, you know, a bunch of bad stuff could have happened, and luckily just some stained carpets was it, so luckily that is not part of my story. Through those being the party house and having all those people around, I finally was able to start getting a little bit of the validation and the attention I wanted from the fair sex. was never the best with that type of stuff, but, you know, okay, you know, with what was going on at the house, it was a little bit easier. And yeah, that was, like, I'd say the biggest point in my relationship with my father, where we've definitely butted heads, you know, me coming into manhood and testosterone running rampant, you know, where he was trying to tell me, don't do this, you don't need to do that. And me, you know, I'm going to do what the hell I want to do. You know, one of the biggest blowouts my dad and I ever had was as we were partying over at another friend's house because mom was in town or dad was house sitting or something like that that weekend. And he was good buddies with my friend's dad, and he figured out what we were up to over there, and he showed up at my friend's house and tried to get me to leave. I'd already been drinking, and that was like that first ever like father-son battle type thing. We didn't come to blows or nothing like that, but I sat there like a little petulant child on the couch and was just like, no, I'm not leaving, you know. Yeah. He's yelling, he's like, you get the fuck in the car, we're going home, you know. And I'm just like, no, you know, because all my friends are around. So again, you know, I couldn't let my dad embarrass me. So yeah, that was a interesting one. And then, you know, my parents used to always, the reference they would make when I was a kid, and they could kind of, I think, see what was going on with the partying, was, is our family has a history of addiction. That was their line. Never anything specific or anything of that nature. It was just, that was the, you know, which I sort of understand. I don't have kids, but I understand you can't be completely honest with a child and about certain topics until they get to a certain age. But some of the times I'm just like, well, you could have explained this or that. Because I didn't know until I was in my mid-20s that my great-grandfather died of liver disease from alcoholism when he was 40. Just some pieces of the puzzle that might have, you know, helped me make a decision one way or another. But, you know, my path is my path, and I was probably just going to do whatever the hell I wanted anyways. So, you know, high school, I did enough to get by. You know, I was a, excuse me, B, maybe some A's sprinkled in there, student, baseball and having fun was my main concerns. Was able to graduate, never really had any big bouts of trouble, you know, was just keeping my partying in check. You know, again, it's just, for me, it was party lifestyle. Senior year, I decided I'm going to quit playing baseball. I need to focus on what I want to do with my life. I'm not going to be a major leaguer. I'm not getting any offers to any good colleges. Like, I'm just getting JUCO offers. So I just decided, like, to quit quit at the beginning of that season. And really, when I look back, I think that was just so I had more free time to party. I didn't do much focusing on what my major was going to be, my career path, any of that. So I got into a few different schools, ended up on KSU. Back then, this was 05, not the KSU it was today, not really much of a campus life, but we did our best to make it have that campus life that we were hoping for. Since I didn't get into UGA, I'm just like, well, I'm still going to have a good time. We're going to figure this out. Well, KSU got out of hand pretty quickly for me. That was when I first started dabbling in other substances, so drinking heavily, and, you know, but then figured out, okay, well, this substance will help me stay up longer, and I can keep drinking, and the party never stops. But then the sun comes up, and I freak out, because I'm like, I like to sleep. So that didn't go so well. No one really... there's not a memo they hand out when you start college that says you got to show up to class. There's no one that wakes you up and says go. So yeah, I failed out within the first semester. Left KSU with a 0.0 GPA. So, and also they don't tell you, hey, there's like a deadline to drop the classes. So yeah, I didn't know any of these things. So yeah, left KSU with a 0.0, failed out, and partying had definitely increased. I go back up to Jasper. I'm working part-time up at a Lowe's. My mom was like, well, if you're coming home, you're going to work till you figure out what you're doing next. And, you know, I just did enough work to support my habits and did, you know, some selling of those other substances to support those other habits. I get my DUI in January 2006. And it's what I lovingly refer to as my wasted DUI because it was a weed DUI. Just cruising around dirt roads up there in Jasper, smoking weed, and, yeah, less than a mile from the house. And I just thought, since I was in a small town, that he was just gonna slap me on the wrist and make her throw weed out and send us home, and the next thing I know, I'm in handcuffs, and I'm just like, what the hell's going on right now? I thought, this is why you live in small towns. I'm not doing anything wrong, it's just weed, you know? They didn't think the same about that. And then the partying was definitely intensifying at that point. The crew that I was hanging out with, we definitely, like, prided ourselves on living a rock star lifestyle, like, being punk rock. Like, we ain't gonna live till we're 30, so what does it matter, you know? And, you know, our minds, and the way we were living, I mean, yeah, it didn't make sense that any of us were gonna live until we were 30. So we definitely prided ourselves on living up to that mantra, live fast, die fun, stuff, you know, all that other dumb stuff. But, you know, that's what we were doing. So I, you know, after the DUI and all that, losing my car, parents were like, you better see if any of those other schools that accepted you the first time are going to take you back and let you go now, even with your 0.0. And lo and behold, Georgia Southern had their arms wide open for me. Great place to go if you're trying to calm down your partying. Statesboro, Georgia. Well, it's a dry county. Yeah, well, the bars are still serving. So, yeah, I started that fall of 06 down at Georgia Southern and just kept going. I was, I had my humility bicycle. That's all I was dropped off with. You don't get a car, you get a bike from Walmart, and you're going to figure it out. So I was completely dependent, you know, on people to get home and back. But, you know, as always, found my people right out of the gate. People that wanted to party like I wanted to party. You want to drink, you want to do X, Y, and Z, let's do it, you know, until those people couldn't handle me anymore. Till then, you know, this dude's a little bit much, you know. So you just, you know, I find my people until I exhausted them or I used them up to the point where they're just like, I can't support this dude's habit no more, you know, because I wasn't working or anything like that. I rarely had a part-time job down there in Statesboro that was, well, first of all, legal, and then second of all, that was, you know, giving me any kind of real money that to even do the partying. But even when I was in those groups and crews and doing all the things down there, I always felt out of place. Definitely had that alone in a crowded bar type thing, like in like college and teen movies, you know, where your main character is like standing still and the room's around them in a blur and they're, you know, you're just alone. So I thought I was doing all the things that, you know, this is what it's all about. I'm getting the college experience and this and that, but I'm still feeling isolated and, you know, not willing to acknowledge what that storm was brewing inside of me, but definitely didn't feel right. And then definitely was also carrying a chip on my shoulder because, again, surprise to no one but me, I'm not getting enough attention from girls and I can't get a girlfriend. Well, who wants to deal with a savage that's behaving this way? Around 07, 08, it's irrelevant, I suppose, but that was where I really took the next step from partying to like abusing substances. And specifically for me, it was opioids. When I found those, that was like as much as I loved the warmth of alcohol and the way that suppressed things, when I found opioids, that was home and I could just, as long as I had what I needed, then I was good to go. And also at that point, yeah, I was peddling a lot of those, and so I was able to support a habit with no, you know, financial repercussions. I paid for study abroad, went on study abroad that summer, got kicked out of study abroad because apparently you're supposed to study when you're on those study abroad trips. I was like, this is vacation, dude. Like, I paid for this. Like, no, the dean of that program did not agree. You know, after, like, multiple times of being too intoxicated, coming back into the dorms, smoking weed in the dorms, yeah, they politely asked me to leave the dormitory and handed me a plane ticket, and I was like, well, you can't make me leave the country. I'll figure it out. I'm going to use that plane ticket eventually, but I'm staying. Not in the dorm, though. It definitely was, you know, taken off in the worst of directions at that point, as I was mixing those two substances. Managed to graduate college. It's a mystery, and I have no idea at this point. I don't know how the professors even let me, but once I figured out, just show up to class, you'll pass. I did enough to get by. C's get degrees, you know. Georgia Southern, they're just trying to funnel you through. So, did enough to get by, graduated, and now I'm not a doctor or a lawyer, but I was there long enough to be a doctor or a lawyer. So yeah, I took my sweet time, but I left with a piece of paper, and it wasn't probation paper. So, in my mind, I'm winning. I'm doing it, man. Go back home. I thought, I drove away from Statesboro that last time. All that stuff was just going to stay back there. I'm not going to use opiates anymore. I'm not going to drink the way I'm drinking. You know, just that's Statesboro. That's not Sean. That's staying back there. Well, that ain't how that works. So just kept on going. Just, you know, working what I deemed jobs beneath me. I have a degree. I should be an executive. And again, ego. You know, I graduated in 2010. So everyone remembers how the economy was during then. Wasn't the best time to be coming out of college with a general studies degree. They're not beating down your door. Didn't make sense to me. So again, you know, I'm still just living the exact same way, well beyond my means and well beyond what any sane, rational person would be doing. But the storm had really started to brew, you know, where I knew something wasn't right, but I wasn't quite sure what it was. For me, it was, I'm just going to blame narcotics. I'm going to put the finger there. The booze are over here. No. We ain't gonna talk about this. But all right, I can give you opiates and, you know, all the other stuff. That's fine. Excuse me. So 2012, I moved up to Chicago. So this is where Captain Half Measures makes his first appearance in the story. So geographic here. We're heading back to Chicago. We're gonna go work for my uncle at his manufacturing plant. First ever corporate style job. And again, all those habits are staying in Georgia. We're going to Chicago, and they ain't going to follow me. So, did what I did, headed up there, and the drinking increased exponentially. So, for those 18 months, I did okay in comparison to what I had been doing with other substances, but the drinking was at an all-time high for me, where drinking every single day. I'm hanging out with, like, early 20-something-year-old kids that are fresh out of college, like when you're supposed to be coming out of college, not at 26. And they're even like, this guy's a maniac. Like, we can't go hang out with him after work. Like, this guy's been way too much. So then drinking alone, hanging out in my apartment by myself, like, going after work, picking up a bottle of whiskey and a six-pack, sitting alone on my couch with my dog in my apartment, taking shots and drinking beer. Because that makes perfect sense for a Tuesday night. You know, why am I doing this? I don't know. And those thoughts started to creep in. Like, hey, dude, what are you doing? Like, why are we doing this? Is this fun? You know, none of that. Those 2 years, or just under 2 years up there, yeah, that was where it really picked up, and I'd say the first time I was there drinking hard liquor every single day, and I'm got to have a six-pack IPAs to wash it down. So, yeah, did my time up there, you know, didn't get enough accolades at work, was, you know, held back on promotions, et cetera, and, you know, I got fed up, and a blizzard as well, so I'm just like, I'm going home, you know, so I found a job, came back down here in 2014, and it was probably within the first 2 months, I started with the opiates right again, because, you know, did not put any distance between myself and, or have any kind of program or anything like that, so again, just right back to it, you know, again, I'm controlling it, I'm okay, I can do it every once in a while, I'm showing up to work, I had a suit and tie job at that point, so I made it, I'm a big wig, you know, and all that type of stuff, and still, you know, what's going on behind the curtain, you know, they had no idea, and, you know, people out, the girlfriend I was with at the time had no idea. She just thought I drank and smoked some weed every once in a while. She had no idea when I, you know, dodge off real quick that I'm, you know, doing opiates and, you know, eventually started experimenting with heroin. So, yeah, it was actually, yeah, just, you know, even more rapid than it was. So then on December 2nd, 2014, I woke up on my back deck surrounded by police and paramedics. So I had gone into my bathroom, done a little bit of what I was doing. Again, she had no idea. She came outside to check on me because my cigarette took an extraordinary amount of time, and I was slouched back in a chair, my head completely drooped back. And luckily, she did the right thing and immediately called the paramedics and police. If I was with party people, I wouldn't be staying here today because they'd have been worried about, you know, protecting themselves. Yeah, I mean, I know for a fact I'm not supposed to be here today, and I denied that fact was a blessing for a very long time because statistically speaking, there's no way I should be staying here. It took 3 Narcans to bring me back. So, like, the paramedic's stress to me was, you were gone, dude. Like, it took us a minute. So, but then when I looked back, and I could remember when I was at the hospital, the nurse, they were trying to figure out what to do with me, because they couldn't figure out what emotion I was feeling, I guess, like whether he's going to go right home and do this again, whether, you know, the anger I was feeling was that I didn't have a white light experience. When I came back through, the best I can remember is this tunnel. I just came, when my eyes open, I remember my stream of consciousness comes through this tunnel. And I was pissed off that I didn't get to see God or see something. No, you know, I'm just like, what the hell, man? You know, so again, I use that anger to inflate my ego where I'm just a bad son of a bitch and heroin couldn't take me out. Just insanity. Yeah, that was, it was an experience. But again, I went to work the next morning because I could not let anyone know that I was struggling. I went home, took a nap, and she was like, you're going to go to work tomorrow? I'm like, I got to go to work because if I don't go to work, they're going to know. You know, I'm just like, this is insanity. I could have just called in sick and rested and started to figure out how to get some help. But no. So I relapsed a few more times from that December to the following May. I've been off opiates since May, we'll call it May 5th of 2015. So, again, all right, I kicked that. That was my problem. This is what was holding my life back. Opiates, you know, that was my thing. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. Yeah, so that was, again, the Captain Half Measures making another appearance. Then a couple years later, it was probably about 2016, middle of that year, because the drinking, again, exponentially picked up. And now that I have some of the information that I have from in here and through some, like, Navalco, for example, I learned about, like, THIQ, which is a chemical. I'm not going to butcher it, but anyways, chemical in our brain that only alcoholics and heroin addicts were releases that. Again, I'm not going to butcher that science. But anyways, it made sense now looking back why my drinking picked up as heavily as it did once I quit the opiates. because it was releasing that same numbing thing, and that phenomenon of craving was just running rampant. So then I decided at that point around 2016 that whiskey and hard liquor are the problem. I can control this thing if I just drink IPAs every single night and just don't drink whiskey, because that's what released the animal. But Bloody Marys don't count for brunch because there's tomato juice and salami and cheese and all that. So, you know, I was a man of principles. And again, acknowledging that something is not right with my liquor consumption, whiskey, etc., I knew something was off, but again, I'm not willing to let it go. My ego is just still like, dude, you got this. You're badass. And I have a friend who actually got sober here in Howe Place. He threw in the towel, and when we were kids, and I thought that was crazy because we were like 23, and he was like, he called me one morning, was at a halfway house, and he was coming over here to Brown Baggers. And he was always like, you know, kind of checking in on me because he knew what was going on because he had partied with me. But his program, you know, because I had no experience with any of this, so his program intimidated me because he went hyper Christian. I remember when he first got sober, he's like, I'm a born again virgin, and all this and that. In my dumb mind, that's what AA is, you know, and I'm just like, you gotta do all that, man? Like, we ain't doing that. So, you know, he was never, you know, he's been such a blessing. I've known this kid since I was 11, and he never was forceful with me, never tried. He'd extend a helping hand and invite, but never was like, you need to come to a meeting type thing. So, like, you know, that was good for me, because at least I knew that there was this out there. Had no idea what this was, but knew it was here. So I've quit the whiskey. I've quit the hard liquor, except for my bloodies. But then the lying and the lying and the lying and the lying is continuing. So I'm lying at the relationship that I was in from 2016 till 2021. I was constantly lying about my consumption amount, with her, with my parents. So, like, my parents, you know, they would, you know, again, just like with any, you know, most people, is like, you're only seeing the four drinks that I let you see. You have no idea what I did before. You know, no idea what I did after. And then with her, like, she works different hours than me. So when she, before she gets home, you know, I'm having as many as I can. So then she's only going to see me with the two or three beers or whatever it is. So yeah, just constantly, you know, just trying to keep it in the shadows, because she knows what's going on and she knows about all this other stuff, you know, that I'm trying to hide from her. It ain't going to be good, you know, and you're not taking my baby away from me. It ain't happening. So, we were actually engaged at one point. We got engaged in 2020, and we were in couples counseling. And in about early April 2021, the couples counselor, as we're sitting there during a session, she's like, well, I'll tell you what your problem is. Like, this guy's an alcoholic, you know. Like, everything you guys are describing right now is, this guy's an alcoholic. And I just, oh, how dare you? No. Me? You know. And, you know, and I pulled the pin. It was, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. You're cool. I'm out of here. So, blow up the engagement. That's the answer. Because if you're going to come between me and what I want to do, then you got to go. It's just, it is what it is. So, you know. So I'm going to cite real quick 506. So I look to all these things as the source of my problems while overlooking the most basic problem, my drinking and myself. I'd known for a long time that I desperately wanted off this merry-go-round, but I had no idea how to do it. April 30th, 2021, I needed to get away to clear my head after blowing up the engagement, and somehow I was the victim. So I'm going to go out west and have the time of my life. And my drinking had definitely picked up once I got her out of my way, and just kept going and going and going. And I remember, as my dad's driving me to the airport on April 30th, I was fighting back tears. Like, the storm was at an all-time high inside, where I just wanted to scream out, dude, I don't know what's wrong with me. I got a problem. Like, something ain't right. couldn't bring myself to do it, to say that to my dad. I left here in Atlanta, flew to Vegas, and, you know, I was going to just be hopping around out west out there. And I get to Vegas, I spend that entire day drinking, going to the casino, et cetera. And, of course, on the way back from the casino, head back to the hotel, I pick up some beer, and, you know, I'm sitting there drinking by myself in the hotel. And I just, again, but I actually finally listened where I just, dude, what the hell are you doing right now? Like, why are you doing this? Like, this isn't fun. Like, I don't understand. You know, what are we doing, you know? So put the rest of the remaining six-pack away. And, that's where I really started the journey I'm on today. So April 30th, 2021 was the last time I consumed alcohol. The next morning, I woke up, got in my rental car, I drove to Death Valley, and just started walking. I didn't know where I was going, what was next, but I just remember I finally started to listen and let my higher power come in. At that point, I had no idea this was a spiritual experience, but there's this voice that just said, just keep going, just keep going, just keep going. So it was just like one day, one step at a time. So for that, I was out there for a month. I was in between jobs. I was in Nevada, Arizona, Utah, California, and Oregon. Just walked for a month. Just hit up national parks and just walked and walked and walked. Didn't know where I was walking, what my next step was, but I'm not drinking. I'm just going to keep going, and we're going to see what happens. Now, you might be asking yourself, how come your sobriety date's not April 30, 2021? Well, that's because I kept smoking weed. So continued to smoke weed, you know, daily, and that increased exponentially because I'm an addict and alcoholic. So if a little's good, more's better. Till that stopped working. My anxiety was at an all-time high. I was restless, irritable, discontent. I'm overthinking everything. I mean, I'm a pothead, so it's just like, of course you're overthinking things, dude. So on February 13th, 2022 is when I last did that. Came to my first ever meeting. It was probably 6-7 days later. I remember it was a Saturday speaker meeting. It was my first ever meeting. I was coming up here with a friend to support them to get their 90-day chip. About 2 hours before the meeting, they messaged me and said, they forgot they had to work that night. They're not coming to the meeting. And I'm like, well, I'm already dressed. I'm already, you know, saying I'm going to go. So let's just go. Let's see what it's all about. So I came, you know, sat by that middle back table back there, listened to the speaker. And she drank and partied like me. So I was like, okay. The next day I came to, I believe it was Sunday night. Is that when they did the beginners meeting as well? On Sunday night. That's when I first met Adam and Josie in the beginners meeting back in that room. And they told me about the Breakfast Club. And y'all been stuck with me ever since. So, you know, that's where I really found my tribe and these connections that we share. And then, you know, started learning about this. You know, living a principle-driven life. The higher power was the big hang-up for me, you know, that kept me out of the rooms all those years is because, again, I thought that this was going to be church. That was my big thing was, is this going to be church? They're going to try to make me, you know, Jesus and all this other stuff. You know, I was just like, no, but it's not. Like, what's underlined? You know, so I was like, hey, dumbass, there goes another excuse, you know. So, yeah, for me, what's been the biggest value and, like, what this experience has continues to be so amazing is this community that we share, this network, this band of misfits, as I like to refer to us. But, you know, this group and in all these rooms, no matter where you go, the strongest people I've ever met in my life, the vulnerability and the honesty, it's, you know, like I say, you know, a lot in beginners meetings and stuff like that, the normal people, if they were showing up and suiting up like we do and sharing these stories, getting these things off their chest, our world would probably be a much better place. So I've loved being able to be around real people and sharing real things, because the things that we talk about in here and the experiences we share and these connections, it's been unlike anything else. And the fun that we have, you know, this, whether it's meetings such as this, the anniversary dinner, other activities, I mean, you're still living a full life. Like, there's nothing, we're not giving up anything. I haven't had to give up anything. I've gained so much, all these friends that I have, and real friends. Because, like, you know, I think most of us will talk about it. It's like, all those bar people and those party people, where the hell are they at now, you know? And I'm blessed that my family has been super supportive. You know, it's been, you know, an amazing ride so far, and I can't wait for the rest of it because, you know, through the service that I'm able to provide here, I'm able to get out of myself in ways that I never did. Because before, it was always, what can you do for me? I was never going to do anything for you unless there was some sort of benefit to me, you know, and that's just me manipulating so I get what I want. Whereas now I get to actually be a human and give back in ways that I never did. I was very rigorous in my application process for a sponsor. I was interviewing every one of you in my head. And I found my homeboy. And he took me through the steps, and it was an amazing experience. I mean, that's where it's at. You know, if you haven't been through the steps and you haven't put in your work yet, that's where the relief's at. Get it off your chest, get it off your heart. And yeah, I mean, I was chomping at the bit a bit too much, which, you know, he did good at reining me in, and easy Padawan, we'll get there, you know, don't worry. You know, so it was awesome. But, you know, again, that taught me the discipline. Okay, you're only doing your first column right now. Don't you go forward. And okay, but I want to. No, don't do it. So that was good. You know, it's a great experience for me. And then, you know, to quote another one of the OGs, my intentions finally started to meet my actions. So that was there. Because before it was always like, well, this is what I want you to think versus, well, this is what I'm really doing. Got a service position early on. You guys didn't give me a checkbook, but still, I was like, oh, this seems a little early, but no, you know, it was awesome. So yeah. So I'm the PICPC for the Breakfast Club. I think I was, 6 to 8 months in when, I was elected or I don't think it's an election process. I think we just call it that, but it's just like, here, do this. But, you know, that's keeps you ingrained. I mean, that's the biggest thing for me is like, when I got in here, I saw what you guys were doing, and I was like, okay, do this. Well, don't do that, but do this. And ingraining myself in the fabric of this group, the value of the home group is immeasurable, because we have that accountability. Like, if you haven't been around, even just for a couple of days, people check in on you. You know, we're picking up on each other's energies. It's a beautiful thing. You know, whether it's making the coffee, pushing in chairs, setting up the binder. I mean, again, just it's an opportunity to start my day with service. I can start with gratitude through my prayer and meditation, and I can put in service work right out of the gate. And it's much harder to have a bad day when you've started with these types of things. So I don't know any other way at this point, because I remember I caught on early within the first month, we'll say. I had to miss a meeting because I got to go to a meeting down at the airport, and I was a sour grape that whole damn day. I was a pissy little child. I was just like, But it's just my serenity level wasn't where it needed to be, because I had, you know, was starting to feel the effects of this thing. So, I'm actually started back in about August, September, I think. It might have been a little earlier, but I'm taking the next step in the development of my professional life and, you know, tying into this is I'm taking CAC classes now. So I'm going into the field at this point. I'm getting out of my corporate job, and I want to be able to do this and work in the recovery field full time. Again, be able to give back in the way that I was giving back to. I tie it into my recovery. It's a little silly, but it is what it is. This is my story. The Braves, big part of my story. Because obviously with the way I was living my life, there's no way I could afford season tickets. So I was using a little tracking app, and it would show me all the money I was saving by not drinking. And that's how I justified and said, okay, I can afford Braves tickets for the first time in my life. So I became a season ticket holder. And as many of you know, I have this weird habit of just doing this the whole game. So, you know, getting on the Jumbotron, stuff like that. And then at the end of the season last year, one of the guys who runs the entertainment or whatever in-house approaches me and asks, you know, thanks me for, you know, my energy and all this and that, and says they want to include me in one of the pregame things for a playoff game. And I'm just like, me? Like, the guy who does this? Like, what the heck? What are you talking about? And yeah, so, and looking back, there's no way that opportunity would have been afforded to me that would have came next if I was still drinking and using. Because when he came and talked to me, if I had been a drunk, there ain't no way they would have trusted. Because what they ended up doing was, is entrusting me with a microphone on the field before a playoff game to start the Braves game off for a playoff game. So, I believe Karen was there watching me ham it up that night. And yeah, again, that's an opportunity that would have never happened if the old Sean was sitting in that seat, because I'd have been like, yeah, man, you know, and he'd just be like, we can't give this guy a microphone. Oh, thanks for your service, but I'll see you later. Here's your $5 hot dog. That'd have been the end of that story. But no, you know, and again, it just proved to me again, another example of, as I gave up absolutely nothing and I've gained everything, because I'm having more fun than I ever had. And that's one thing I know, like, is big for me still, is proving to myself, to anyone else, and showing them that there is so much fun for us to have. Concerts, comedy shows, Braves games, whatever it may be, we can do anything, we can go anywhere. The obsession has been lifted from me, and I'm safe. I don't have to worry about it. I remember early on at one of the Braves games, smelling beer and being like, ew, and just, like, how quickly it was unappealing to me. So, as I'm running in on time, I will close with 529. I'll close with 529. Took several years, but I learned to be grateful for my alcoholism and the program of recovery it forced me into. For all the things that had happened to me and for me, for a life today that transcends and far exceeds anything I had previously known. I could not have that today had I not experienced all the yesterdays. Well done.